Hello and welcome to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with relevant news, recent developments, and must-have information about what's happening inside the Mat-Su School District, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
My great pleasure to welcome into the studio Deborah Kroll. Welcome, Deborah. What I'd like to do is have you introduce yourself a bit more, because I have information that says you've done a lot of study to become a supervising psychologist in the school district, and tell us a little bit about your background.
I looked at a number of things and had my own private practice in Minnesota, and eventually made my way to Alaska. Since coming to the school district, the Mat-Su School District, I had to respecialize as a school psychologist in addition to my doctorate in clinical. And then from there, moved on to getting certified as a school neuropsychologist, and I'm also a certified impact consultant.
Okay. That's a lot of training, and we're going to be focusing particularly on something that you said last. You're an impact consultant. Describe a little bit what that means, impact itself.
Impact itself is a neurocognitive test to help assess whether or not a concussion has possibly occurred, and to look at a student over time, or an adult, it can also occur, but a student in our case, over time, to see when they have recovered from that concussion. It is one tool to use in regards to assessing concussions.
Okay, and we know that recently, this last few days, there's been a fair amount of media coverage about two levels of sports that have tended to be involved in concussion production. One is the National Football League, ongoing discussion, I'd say that, and a little bit of a back and forth from a variety of people about just how bad the situation is in terms of long-term effects on anyone who plays in the National Football League. And then on the other end of the spectrum, if you will, a recent discussion about, well, maybe if you're under 12 years of age, you shouldn't be playing football.
So there's a lot of controversy in the field, and you've hit the nail on the head. Experts have gone back and forth between taking an alarmist view that no one should play football, to the point where it's kind of swung back to a place of moderation, at least for the people that developed impact and are at the University of Pittsburgh and the Sports Medicine Clinic in Pittsburgh, where they are saying what we need to do is make sure that kids, we adequately assess when kids are exposed to possible concussion and help them recover over time and make sure they're recovered before they return to play. And that includes also looking at them and their functioning in the schools as well. So there's not only a protocol for return to play when a student is ready to go back to sports, but also there's a protocol for return to academics, which is helping them in the school setting and providing them certain accommodations to help support their recovery. So that doesn't directly answer your question about whether or not kids should play football. We do know that young brains are considered more neuroplastic, meaning that they recover better, but we've also got now a series of research studies that are showing that young brains are also more susceptible to injury, and that we ought to be respecting their brains. It's not only football players, though. The second most injured group is our cheerleaders, and those would be the ones that are doing the huge tumbling acts. But then if you look at kids across the valley, there's a lot of hidden concussions in that many times kids don't report to their parents what they're doing, especially as they get older and when they're taking risks. And we have kids on ATVs, we have kids on snow machines, we have kids on skateboards. Those kids may or may not be wearing helmets, and helmets are useful in making sure that kids don't have skull fractures, but it doesn't really protect you from the possibility of a concussion, which is just a change in brain functioning from what is normal for that brain. And it's a result of a blow to the head or a rapid acceleration or deceleration that occurs. The brain is like Jell-O. I explain that to kids, and they look at me with their eyes very wide. My brain is like Jell-O. And I say, yes, you've got this great hard skull that protects you from having wounds that would cause infection and that would get inside your brain. But it doesn't do anything about really protecting your brain when it hits something, when a blow happens. The brain goes back and forth and wiggles like Jell-O, and it hits the bony processes that are inside the skull. And some of that is what's causing the changes in the brain functioning for a period of time, anywhere from 7 to 10 days and sometimes up to 4 weeks for kids.
Mike Malevsky here, and I'm speaking with Deborah Kroll, who is a psychologist with the Mat-Su Borough School District. And what I am wanting to get at is we're talking in kind of a general way about injuries, concussions, and so on. How is the Mat-Su School District doing something about this?
So I'm really proud of the Mat-Su School District. Being part of it, I'm proud of it, but also because in 2006, I went out to Pittsburgh and got my initial training with a sports medicine clinic when they were starting to develop IMPACT and providing it to the National Football League and the National Hockey League. And then going internationally, and I brought our school district's awareness about this would be a possible test that we would want to use with our students. And by 2011, we started doing that officially. And so in all our high school sports, every student has to participate, and they have to take a baseline test. And what that does, hopefully, is provide a comparison. So that if they do have a concussion, we have what their functioning looked like before they ever had a concussion. And that is part of the student sports fee, so it is a free, essentially free. They're kind of paying for it, but it still is free. And so every student goes through that, and whether they be cheerleaders, soccer players, volleyball, basketball, hockey, football, every one of them are having a baseline, and then if they do have a concussion, we have something to compare to.
That's fascinating. Two questions. One, you've mentioned a variety of sports. I know there are 19,000 students in the school district. What number would you say are involved? How many tests are given? Is a ballpark figure?
I know. I'm looking at you with my face.
We haven't done
a really good job of tracking that. I might see 40 students in a year where the concussion is lasting more than the 7 to 10 day, which is a very normal for a concussion to last, a mild concussion we're talking about. And I'm seeing the kids where it's more complicated and it's taking longer for them to heal. And then I'm watching them over time, reevaluating them and giving support to the school about what accommodations need to occur, support to the family, support to the student. Because so often athletes, one of the reasons this test was developed is because athletes are eager to play.
Sure.
And we really wanted an objective measure. And so this is only one component of an evaluation, but it's an important component of an evaluation. It also includes a clinical interview and something that's called a vestibular ocular motor screening. I can explain that. It's a big word.
Please do.
But let me say, so the idea about an objective measure is prior to this, we would ask kids, how do you feel? What are your symptoms? And we can go down the line of common symptoms for concussion. And the most common is headache. And then the second is what's called fogginess, which is kind of like a feeling like you're out of it. Kids will describe it in different ways. But that's not very objective. And if you're an athlete and you really want to play and the game, the big game is coming up next weekend, you're going to tell me or another professional, no, I don't feel those things. Or you're going to tell your parents you don't feel those things even when you're feeling that. So the idea with IMPACT is that if you have that baseline test and then after a concussion you take another test, it may oftentimes pick up that there's an alteration in your performance on the test. The test is looking at your visual memory, your verbal memory. It's looking at your reaction time. It's looking at your visual motor speed. And it's also looking at your impulse controls. That's along with symptoms. So it's looking at a number of factors that are affected when a kid has a, or an adult has a concussion.
How long does the test take?
Test takes anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
And it is done with a computer, and it's all computerized at 6 tests. And then there's 2 tests at the very end that come back and look at delayed memory. So there's immediate memory, and then there's delayed memory. And one of my first questions for kids after a concussion is when they take the test again, yes, they're more familiar with it, and there's varied. The test has like 5 different iterations. They have a test bank of words and of tasks that they do for this test, and they are changed over time so that there's to reduce any kind of practice effect when you're giving a student a test like once a week until they're recovered. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Again? No, that was fine. that was fine. In my own mind, I'm thinking about, okay, I think I've got the picture. To take the test, a student sits before a computer and runs through it, and you have safeguards in place so that people don't become used to taking the test.
Exactly.
Memorizing the eye chart and things like that. Yeah, okay. And then you go on from there. So a student that would be doing it, am I correct? These tests are given to people. Say someone is playing football. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be playing football. Do I take the test before I start practice?
Yes, generally you do. But the athletic directors and the coaches are administering this and the baselines.
Okay.
And they have been trained in this. And there's a protocol set up by Impact about what the testing environment should be like. Kids should be separated to their own monitors, not interacting. It should be a quiet environment. And this test is also designed to detect sandbagging. So say there's an athlete who wants to be pretty tricky and wants to, score lower so that if they do get concussed, they won't look so bad because they scored poorly in the first place. They have done tests, research with Impact, and had people try to score lower, and the test generally picks that up. There's a pattern that you can identify that shows you that it's not a valid baseline.
Sneaky test. Yeah.
Sneaky kids.
Feedback from, I think, of 3 groups in particular, coaches, parents, and the students themselves.
I think initially in 2011, this was a huge culture shift. Mm-hmm. For us as a country, but also as the Valley. Parents, and particularly dads, I don't mean to give dads a bad name, but dads would say, I got a ding to my head and it doesn't mean anything. I went on and I'm fine. But the research is suggesting that perhaps multiple dings over time does not create fine brain functioning. And we're capable of detecting more, and we're capable of supporting kids. So why not use this technology? I would say since 2011, we have made a huge cultural shift. Our athletic directors have been instrumental in that, particularly under the leadership of Mike Boyd. I want to give a shout out to him at Colony High School. He's done some training on Impact himself and really was a leader in kind of helping promote this as well and taking this seriously and encouraging parents to take this seriously. And I think as our parents have become more informed, as the country has become more informed, everybody is pretty much in line and wanting their child to do the best that they can, and they recognize that this is just a safety and support through the schools for their child. We're not trying to prevent kids from playing. We're trying to support kids getting back when they're healed, and that's a good thing.
So my next question might be better directed, Mike, but the chair is empty. We don't have him here. So I'm going to ask you to give a try here. I'm curious about, because following anyone who's been following this, certainly at the national level, professional sports, knows that there are implications for changing the rules of the game, the way the game is played, to reduce some potential for having concussions, as well as changing gear, headgear, and all the rest of it. So as you've been associated with this over time, have you any comments to make about what either locally or nationally seems to be happening in those two areas?
It's my understanding that locally, our athletic directors and coaches are encouraging kids to do practices that don't always result in contact head-to-head, so that there's less of that kind of occurrence in football. During the practices, it's more during the games that you're going out full bore, but in the practice, there's some pullback on that. That isn't always true because I'm seeing kids that are also get hit in practice, you know, and kids just get, athletes just get excited about their sport and really, you know, just trying hard and all of a sudden something happens. But that is one thing that has changed. And then the other thing that has changed is there is there's been some changes in football helmets themselves. Again, that protects to some extent, but it's not going to stop a concussion. It may minimize it to some extent, but it's not going to stop it because your brain is still that jello and it's still wiggling around if it's rapid deceleration or a blow to the head or acceleration like in a car accident. Then you're not wearing a helmet anyway, but So the other thing, though, that I see is that the athletic directors do a great job, and they've gotten together and really kind of have a program when they do a presentation to their athletes at the beginning of the year about the baselines, the purpose of the baselines, recognizing the signs of concussion, and calling each other out on it. I recently saw a student just last week who had a concussion, and he did not pull himself out of the game. He recognized he was having some problems, but he was probably adrenaline pumping, all that kind of stuff, you know, wants to not let down the team. And it was not until one of his teammates called him out and said, hey, to the coaches, this kid's not, you know, functioning. He's not understanding the plays. He's not following what's going on. And then he got pulled out to the sideline and they assessed him and they said, oh yeah. So it's really important, that culture piece about everybody seeing this as something important, and that, again, it's not to stop kids, but it's to say, hey, we want everybody healthy when they're playing.
Okay. Okay. So Mike Malevsky here, and we've been talking about concussions and a project called Impact, which locally seems to be having an effect. The state of Alaska, I'm going to guess state of Alaska nationally, a project like this, which is widespread, must have conferences and all kinds of things or discussions. Do you have a sense of how this project is impacting around the country or in Alaska beyond the Yamatsu Valley?
They started with the University of Pittsburgh Sports Medicine Clinic and mushroomed from there. It originally, you know, went out to the professional sports teams, a lot of play about professional athletes, but then it's filtered down to the high schools and even the middle schools. And I'll just put my little plug here. We were talking about young brains and sports injuries. Kids in middle school are not well coordinated. They're less coordinated than their high school peers. And we do not assess kids in the middle schools who are playing sports. We assess them in the high schools. Good thing. And we're on the forefront of that, I would say, because I don't know what Fairbanks is doing. I don't know what the Kenai is doing. But we're doing this as a school district. I know that my understanding is, I should say, that the Anchorage School District, that this is something that's done outside of the school district itself. So if you want to get a baseline, you are not getting it through the school district and your athletic fee. You're going outside to get that baseline to participate in sports. Whereas here, we're providing it as a service, and all, you know, our coaches and athletic directors are doing that within the schools themselves. And then my service of helping support students if they're taking longer to recover, if they need some accommodations in the school, all that is free. And you're not having to necessarily go out to a professional in the outside district, like outpatient services, to pay for those kinds of things. So our school district has done a lot in that regard. I think the country as a whole has gone forward on this and are aware and are supporting kids. It just varies with the districts and always comes down to money and manpower.
Sure.
And what we have. So that is also an issue for the middle school kids. When I've talked with the school nurses who get really excited about this topic because they actually see the most injuries of anybody.
Right.
And they see the kids that are the younger kids, elementary, who may have a fall on the playground during recess. There's nothing to assess them. Now, Impact has developed a child format. The computerized format that I do is from ages 12 to age 60. And they also use it in the workforce. But the new format for children is an iPad version. You have to have two iPads.
Okay.
I have done some training on that, but I'm not formally using that at this point in time, and nobody in our district is using that. It's still brand new. It was just out last year, but that's for the younger child. But perhaps some pediatrician offices will take that on in the Valley. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, of course, the interesting other question, it has to do with, as someone moves on beyond high school into college, universities, I think if it sounds as if organized sports activities are the place where these kinds of assessment will be most used. And you've rightly indicated people who are outside those structured forms. You're playing on a playground, or for that matter, you're in your 20s or 30s and you're skiing, or
yes,
you're doing whatever you would be doing and you have a slight concussion. Or you get a little fuzzy. And again, it sounds as if the classic approach, if you something like this happens, is that if you are briefly fuzzy for a short period of time, and then you seem to shake it off, that you go on about your business saying, okay, I've dodged the bullet, or whatever that mm-hmm. means. Yes.
Yes, most of us do that. At this point in time, you know, most people, 7 to 10 days outside of a mild concussion, we recover. Our brain returns to what we call homeostasis, so back to our original functioning. It's 40% of kids in 7 to 10 days look good, 60% in 3 weeks, 80% in, no, sorry, 60% in 2 weeks, 80% in 3 weeks, and 90% in 4 weeks. It's only 10% of kids or people that continue to have ongoing problems with that.
Right.
So as far as risk factors for kids, and I'm going to just pull aside from young people at this moment, or young adults, risk factors for kids that we look at that place them at possible risk for protracted or a longer recovery period are kids with attention problems, kids with learning disabilities, kids who have motion sickness, history of motion sickness, history of migraines in the family. So there's all sorts of interesting things that kind of place some kids at risk for a little bit longer recovery period. I'm not sure where you were asking about the 20-year-old group.
Well, I think what you've answered really covers all of that. It just okay. The point very often, it's interesting, when we're in schools, we have a structured environment and all kinds
True.
Of people that notice what's happening. Once you leave, though, unless you have a work-related injury,
yes.
if it's a pleasure-induced injury, I can say it that way, but somehow you've been out there and it happens, the probability that follow-up
is pretty low.
Is low.
I would say so, unless you go to your physician. I think physicians, the Center for Disease Control has a training component that's available online, and physicians are encouraged to go through that. I certainly had to do that to be ASA approved to determine whether students, along with all the rest of the training that I've done, to make that determination of when students are ready to return to play. But physicians are becoming more aware of this. And so if you were to go to see your physician, they may ask you these questions. They may be able to, you know, identify whether or not you've had a concussion and give you some support about how you should, you know, treat your brain during that period of time. That said, let me say my standard, and this is for all kids and whether you're a kid or you're a 20-year-old and something like this has happened, is you want to reduce your activity. What we believe at this point in time is most often with a mild concussion, you're not talking about an injury to the, any kind of brain structure. You're talking about a change in the metabolism of the brain. The brain needs more energy. Therefore, we're pulling back on what we're asking them to do in the school so that they're still oftentimes attending or attending part days and getting instruction, but we're not asking them to go full bore or to take tests or things like that. Similarly, we're pulling them back from participating in sports, no further head injuries, but also reducing the amount of activity they're doing, allowing them some activity, not putting them in a dark room like we used to do. Back in 2006, when I first started this, that's what they were talking about, is you're in a dark room, you know, 24 hours, up to a week. And if you're an athlete, that's like, you know, that's like prison. They need to move. They're active. So we say, you know, activity is tolerated, but with some judicious support from parents oftentimes about hydrating very well, because we want to make sure the headaches are not from lack of hydration. We want to make sure that they're eating very well, the three squares, but also snacks during midday, snack in the afternoon to keep that blood glucose level stable. And then we're also asking them to do very regular bedtime, which for teenagers it can be a real struggle. But it's really important to get that and not to overnap. Some kids feel very fatigued and need to nap more, but we're saying 30 minutes and no more than that per day, so that it doesn't change the sleep-wake cycle. And just getting back to a very regulated state for a period of time while they're in recovery. If they want to go back to what teenagers do afterwards, well, can't control that. But at this point in time, if they want to recover quickly and fast, they will follow these kinds of supports.
Okay. Well, thank you. We've covered a bit of the ground. There's probably more to talk about, and we might have you come back in at another time. But Deb Kroll, I want to thank you for coming in this morning for another edition of Inside the School District and focusing on Project Impact.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
All right.
You've been listening to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with information about what's happening in the Mat-Su schools, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.